Heritage Foundation, too. That's another thing about...
Yes.
You know, so when Obama was flirting and torturing or taunting us or teasing us with the public option, it was like, oh, whatever, this is just... You know, just for the hippies.
But I do remember, Sandra, that during the primary process, there were a number of people out there who were saying, listen, Hillary's health care plan is a lot closer to what we want than what his is.
Well, exactly. No, and it's just kind of like, you know, the public option went away right away. And then we were presented with this heritage third way mesh of madness that we're getting, and you know, I don't know what that's going to be.
And see that if you look at Afghanistan, if you look at Guantanamo, if you look, there's a number of places, and I don't want any of the diehard Obama supporters to say, see, he doesn't love him like he ought to. No, these are just facts that. There are a number of places within this presidency, Sandra, where Barack Obama has actually carried on and carried out the plans of the Bush administration.
Exactly. And, you know,
and so I remember very well January of 2005 when George W. Bush said, I just won me some political capital and I'm going to spend it. And the first thing he said he was going to spend it on was... Yeah, the privatization of Social Security.
And you saw the mobilization like you never did before, and that shit was stopped. Now, we've already had a taste of how the left and the Democrats respond to Obama's actions, and that's not really...
Right, and that's what scares me. If Bush privatization of Social Security 2.0 beta comes out in, say... January 2013. Well, I'm pretty secure in saying that there is an element within the Democratic Party, and there's a word for them, and I'm not going to use it because I respect their opinions and I like them. But they're going to respond by calling us hippies for objecting to. Well, look, maybe it'll work out to put young workers Social Security in the stock market.
Oh yeah, no, and don't forget. And I remember this too. You know, you follow away these little statements, and you think, "What the?" But that whole statement when Obama was talking about entitlements, and he's had the nerve to mention the, you know, vaguely and kind of not straightforward, but he suggested that, well, maybe people like him don't need it. Bingo.
Right. So what's the harm in a little means testing?
Right, and that's the end of it. Everyone understands. Not everyone. I'm saying in our little family here. When they means test the program in this country, that means it's for people who are poor or who can't get anything else. Thus, the program is marginalized and easy to finish off.
Right, and what will begin as rational means testing will proceed through Republican machinations to become really mean means testing.
Right, and the whole idea of the genius of the program that Roosevelt and his people came up with was everyone in, nobody out. I'm quite happy for Warren Buffett to get his fucking Medicare and Social Security. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I want him to have it. I want him to have it.
I don't have a problem with it.
I want Rockefellers on Social Security.
Ayn Rand. That bitch got it. Good for her.
Yeah.
Everybody in, nobody out.
See that, and maybe that's the fundamental disconnect that people like you and me and the rest of the Horn family have, Sandra, is that we look at these things in a way that other people don't, or can't, or won't. And that, I mean, you know, food stamps. You know what? I want everybody to have food stamps. Medicare? I want everybody to have Medicare. Social Security? I want everybody to have Social Security. I mean, because you know what? If you're raising two kids and you're making $45,000 a year in America, you ain't eating steak every night either.
Well, you know, and I know we've had this discussion before, but you know, the biggest barrier to the expanding of the social safety net, even when the marginal tax rate was 91%, is, like I said before, the, quote, diversity of the country, i.e., we don't want the niggas to get it, so it ain't going to problem in all the other OECD countries. Their safety net covers the whole of the population. The problem in this country is that there's so much hatred for various groups, gays, blacks, whoever, that they just can't find it in themselves to extend this shit to everybody. So we say that it's a market, the magic of the marketplace, and all other sort of excuses. But the biggest problem is that they don't, you know, they don't think certain people is deserving of it. I'm sorry, that's what it comes down to. That's why it's not here in this country. That's what I think. I think that that explains everything about part, at least a part, a good explanation for why we don't have single payer. You know, even Nixon believed in a minimum income. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And, you know, Andy just wrote in from Redwood City, Sandra, and he said, tell Sandra, President Obama calls Social Security and Medicare an entitlement. It doesn't matter what we or you or us call it. So the term is now well respected in the corporate media among corporatists and the Blue Dogs, DLC, Friends of the Chicago School. If these two programs, Andy says, are entitlements, then by definition, all private insurance companies are running entitlement programs. You pay a premium, have a contract, and expect that contract to be honored when you submit a claim or the policy matures. But hell, says Andy, Mr. Obama has put these programs on the chopping block and facilitates the Republican Karl Rove talking points with his use of the word entitlement.
Well, the problem is that people don't understand. I mean, when I hear entitlement, I can understand that it sounds like, well, yeah, I paid into it, so I'm entitled to it. That's the connection I make.
Right.
But we know what they're turning it into. That's why I refuse. I have to use insurance. Because if I say entitlement to people I'm talking to, they take the Karl Rove definition. Because that's what's been
Welfare.
Pounded into the heads of people. You know, when they hear entitlements, they don't make the connection that, listen, you dumbass, you weren't paid into it, so you're entitled to it. They can't seem to be, I don't know if it's bad education. I don't know what it is, Bob. You know me. I'm the last little snob. You know it's true. So, you know, it's like, you know, what the fuck? Make some connections here. Critical thinking. Now, please. So, in the meanwhile, we have Obama talking about entitlements, and you and I are like, God damn. Because we know what it means, just like Andy just explained very clearly.
Yeah, and I get what Juanita meant in her call, too, when she says that, you know, the last human being that she knows of in the Senate is Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Now, here's a guy who is going to offer, if he hasn't already, legislation that just, you know, eliminates that stupid $106,000 cap.
Yeah. I mean, that would solve the problem, you know, for the next seven generations, if I may add.
If not 10, 12, 15,
yeah,
what
have
you. It might be forever.
Yeah, no, because, you know, we're talking, and yes, that would be a 12% or 6% tax on all them motherfuckers. So that's one way of taxing them.
And what have they got to complain about if we do that?
Oh, no, it's so gross that this is not an issue. But, you know, more importantly...
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, more importantly is the idea that the fucking capital gains tax, you know, the fact that they can't even raise that 5 or 7% is shocking. You understand? Because these people earn all their income from capital gains, and that bitch is only 15%. It's absolutely criminal and damn near immoral that people aren't up in arms about that. Because you got all these assholes who don't do nothing. I mean, I want to grow up to sell derivatives. Fuck. Okay?
Hey, maybe you can sell Texas dead teacher life insurance derivatives. I mean,
but the whole argument that somehow capital gains is superior to your wages is absurd in this environment now. You don't even make no sense. They can pay.
But remember that they go on the offensive by saying that it's too much. They want the capital gains tax eliminated.
No, they want to eliminate it, but I mean, it needs to, no, but it's a source of revenue that needs to be attacked. It has to be increased. It's incredible. I mean, it's just the whole sort of arsenal that the rich have that can be exposed to taxation is damn near endless.
Yeah, well, I mean, and we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
There has been in this country, Sandra, why is there not now a penny transaction tax on everything that takes place on Wall Street?
Well, that's the thing. yeah, I mean, Tobin tax. I mean, it's a name for it. There's a theory out there. There's an economist who developed it. I mean, the thing is that Europe is embarking on, they're talking about some sort of Tobin tax.
Well, it's certainly not going to, a penny is, you know what, if investors leave the market over a penny.
Gone.
Exactly.
Not only that, but it needs to be disciplined because I'll go back to the one quadruple fucking derivative thing that's floating around. I mean, if you had some sort of transaction tax, you know, it'd be a lot less appealing to be doing these bets upon bets upon bets upon bets like we have, you know? The state is obligated to attack what is essentially a foreign occupier. That's what these sort of financial entities have become, because they're sapping the sort of life energy out of everything, as far as I can tell.
And so raise the capital gains tax to 25%. Raise it to 30.
Yeah,
I don't care.
A penny
transaction tax on every trade, because you know what? The trading houses themselves have their own form of taxation. It's called a fee.
Exactly. No, listen, the percentage on their transaction plus, you know, adding, you know, making the capital gains 27 to 30% or whatever, or 25%. Listen, them bitches will still be rich.
Yeah, it's not like they're not going to be able to afford lunch.
No, and it's just incredible. And the thing that's really disturbing to me is that, you know, there's this whole idea of state capacity, and then there's Weber's definition of the state being having a monopoly to do violence. Well, the state is also the entity that can tax. But somehow, that mechanism is out the window, where the people who are so-called representing us spend all their time protecting the wealth of the rich.
Right. And see, some of that I think is you hear these little things that are out there. There's that one passage in McCulloch versus Maryland.
Yeah.
Where the Supreme Court remarks that the power to tax is the power to destroy.
Yeah.
And, if I had my little Mr. Peabody time machine, I'd go back and make sure that that doesn't go into that opinion.
Well,
because it's one of those things that little right wingers hang on to with their nasty little claws sunk in all the way up to the quick.
No. But the thing is that they have no problems policing the citizenry. You see what I'm saying? The state is quite adept at doing that, and it used to be quite adept at taxing the rich. I mean, those marginal tax rates—that's not fantasy. That was real.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hideous because the U.S., you know, with their Bretton Woods regime, you know, introduced all this shit to the world, you know, and now it's really coming back to screw us over so badly. It's stunning. I don't know.
The other place, and you and I are both in this same boat, I didn't like it when they did it to me. And when they did it to me, I was a much younger man. I'm still pissed off that I got to work my ass off to 67 to ever draw the first damn dime of Social Security. I want that shit gone backwards.
Yeah, no, and it should. And the way we have this kind of permanent high unemployment, the policymakers and the people who are designing these policies should be doing exactly that. They should roll back the ages so more people can basically get out of the labor market, because other people can get the jobs. I mean, these solutions aren't that difficult. And the fact that we don't have a government that's responsive to us is a huge problem, which I don't know if the ballot box is going to take care of. I mean, I've been laughing at old Mike Malloy. He is gone, man. He's out there.
I've been reading Brad Friedman long enough to think that I got no real faith in the ballot box anymore, as long as we're voting on video games.
Yeah. No, I'm not disagreeing with it. It's just kind of, I don't know. I mean, you know, like I started at the top of this call, which I'm still sort of confused about, you know, where the right is going to go with these entitlement, you know, I'm saying it, these insurance programs.
Well, I mean, I'm comfortable saying that they won't do an outright kill because they can't get away with it. But to see them still, I mean, see what happens to me? I go back to things, for instance, Cassie, you know, she's a sophomore at Princeton now. And she said, retirement, Bob, my generation can't even imagine being 40, let alone retired.
Right. So you're saying that whole generation is not even going to be paying attention to these sort of drastic changes that they'll be able to do.
Or they will pay attention enough to hear the right wing say, well, we're going to let you keep your money. Because remember, that's how the last raft of tax cuts got boondoggled in.
No, but that was before you had a total collapse of the financial system. I mean, trust me, I understand that the propaganda is real thick, but I do think a lot more people are much more skeptical of the financial system now than they were in 2005. They gotta be.
But by the same...
So for someone to suggest we're going to, you know, make every all the programs a 401, they might get laughed in the face with that one. Because, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe you're right about that.
Or some sort of hybrid, Sandra. You know, we're not going to completely do away with it, but we're gonna cut the rate, and we will not tax you if you put that much into your own 401k or whatever, you know, cut it by 2.2%, and the next election cycle, the Republicans will say, well, I want you to be able to keep more of your money. We're going to make it 3%.
Yeah.
And so without ever telling anybody that they're killing Social Security, and by telling the younger generation of working people, well, you know, you can go spend it on the lottery, or you can go to Vegas, or hell, you know what? You could put it into a medical savings account, or a Roth IRA, or any of that silly horse shit. Well, what they're effectively doing, well, it's like the conversation you and I had when they struck the deal that cut the payroll tax by 2 percentage points, and you said, when is that ever going to get put back on?
Actually, it's going to get put back because all of a sudden Republicans have decided that's a tax cut they don't want. Do you know about this?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, which is, I think that's really interesting. It's like, wait, now you don't want a tax cut to remain? It's just sick. It's different.
And if they do that, then the rate goes back up, and that gives them more room in a couple of years to say, we're going to cut by 2.5%, and you're going to take that money and invest it in the market.
Yeah, or some madness. I mean, no, I understand. But at the base of this is the total lack of leadership on the Democratic side, unless they're just two peas pod, you know what I mean, which is what I'm beginning to think is the case. It's kind of good cop, bad cop, Democrat or Republican, right?
Yeah, well, no, it's not the first time it's run across my mind because, like I said, I've said before, you know, maybe we're the rubes for saying, you know, well, why can't he be the kind of president we wanted him to be? Maybe he's being the kind of president he wants to be.
No, I'm over that. That one's out the window. I don't, you know, I think that, yeah, no, that's why I said, you know, he might be really effective president, not the weak one. But anyway, just a quick thought. Did you see that? I forget the guy who wrote that article. He used to be the coach of LSU. He wrote in the New York Times about there should be a farm league for the NFL like baseball.
I didn't see it, but I'm not surprised to hear it.
Yeah, you know, because it's like, oh, you know, I guess the whole idea of it would take care of all the infractions in the college because some people, you know, don't want to go to college. They just want to, you know, play football, but they're not physically ready. So why not set up this farm system where you can be paid to get ready to play in the NFL? I mean, I don't, you know, I don't know. My first thought was like, ew, but maybe you have any opinion about that?
Well, first of all, I think you're going to have a hard time resting this multi-billion-dollar industry away from the colleges.
There's that, and also that's what I was about to ask you. How would they fund such a farm thing? You know, where would the funding come from? The NFL?
Yeah, I mean, if it's truly a farm system, because that's the way it works in baseball.
So the NFL would pay these young people to get their bodies right to go into the NFL.
Yeah, and they would, I suppose it would be structured in such a way as, you know, I don't know, maybe they play on Wednesdays. When does it? I mean, like a farm club.
Yeah.
You know, say a triple A baseball team loses money, but it puts, you know, it's a pretty good brand of baseball, and they put fans in the stands, and they, you know, they sell concessions and everything, and they might come close to a break even. And if they don't, the ownership packs up and moves on to somewhere else that will.
Right. I mean, because there's been a lot of sort of...
But there is a significant subsidy that flows downhill from the mother organization.
Yeah, so that would be in direct competition with the multi-billions that these universities get, though, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, if some kid who... You know, the real hot shots are not going to go to college, and... One of the things, and it had to be dealt with a couple of years ago, you know, where the NFL and the NCAA came to an agreement that, you know what, you cannot go and play NFL football until you've got 2 years under your belt in college.
No, I thought it was three.
Is it three? Is it?
I think it's three. Yeah, I think it's three, because that's what the article suggesting, that the stint outside of the NFL for these young people would have to be 3 years, which is, I guess, the number of years a man needs extra to get big enough to play in the NFL or something.
But it's in a way, if you maybe you could interpose that as a layer between college and pro. But all you're doing, you know, one of the reasons that kids want to come out early if they think they have a prospect of going high in the draft, Sandra, and this is not a sporting thing, you know, this is a workers' issue, as we've discussed it in the past, is that the odds. You know, let's say you stay for that senior year out of loyalty to alma mater, right? I mean, you really care. You're trying to get an education. And on the third game of the season, you blow a knee.
Right.
Or something even more awful happens. Well, you know what? Nothing nice happens to you from the college's standpoint from that point on. Because,
they've got
roster requirements they've got to meet. You know, this ain't Woody Hayes football where you can have a home squad of 197.
Yeah, no, you're ass out. They're done with you, and you're gone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I just, you know, I don't know. I just thought it was sort of, you know, it's interesting, and I guess all this is bubbling up because there's been just sort of nonstop scandals, right?
Well, I think they're finally coming to grips with the fact that these scandals you're always going to, and this Miami scandal is so damn tawdry.
It's over the top. Come on now. I was just like, what?
No, really? You paid for the stripper's abortion? Really?
Yeah, no, it's just...
The pathetic quality of Miami saying, well, we don't know who this guy is. And oh, yeah, you do. And they show the footage of the guy carrying the Miami flag out of the tunnel with the pelican, with the smoke and the fog and the guy... No, you know who we are. Yeah.
Right. No. And it's just, it is so, so much so that you have to hear Luther Campbell going on. I'm like, Luther Campbell? Shit. Anyway, no. I don't know. The Miami thing is hella entertaining. Listen, they probably cannot. They are just can't wait for the people to get on the football field. This has just been a disaster. The NFL
at this point, Miami could go 0-12. Please just play. You know, as long as they're being allowed to play football, because I don't know if you heard, but at first it was being said, well, you know, we'll never use the death penalty again because when we shut down SMU, we screwed the entire Southwest Conference. You know, that hurt players who were innocent. Blah 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 blah. And the honchos at the NCAA said, oh no, the death penalty's still on the table.
Oh.
And you know, if not this, who, what? And then you take into account that you want to know who's not needing any laxatives lately? Nick Saban at Alabama. Because
what are you trying to say?
He's got two of those crooked bastards from Miami on his staff.
Okay, yeah, no, you know what time it is. That's what I'm saying. All those programs, especially the high achieving ones, they all hella suspect. And you know, and old Fugly down in Carolina, he was the one talking about paying folks, wasn't he? So they all know.
Yeah.
They all know the writing's on the wall. But I just wonder how it's going to resolve itself because, you know, come season time, everybody forgets because they just want to watch some football. So I know they
And you know what? I'm that guy.
Exactly. Exactly.
I want to see Dana Holgers. Because I mean, we, you know, it was all small. It was small potatoes comparatively. But my beloved Mountaineers went through the ringer. And that friend of Jesus who turned out to be doing some sort of cloak and dagger Stalin-esque sleaze program. I mean, the guy gets on the phone to a sports writer at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and says, dig up some dirt on this Holgerson guy for me, would you? And this, you know, this is the guy who said, well, it doesn't matter whether we win or lose. They're fine Christian young men we're turning out here in Morgantown. Oh, that shit must have turned to ashes in his mouth. So I just want to see him play some damn ball. And LSU is coming to Morgantown. And, you know, I don't know. I'll put a limb on eBay for a pair of good tickets to that.
Yo, don't, you know, hide your cough, sir. Okay, listen, I'll let you go. Oh, I'll send this to you. It's this amazing animation of the star being eaten by a black hole that they said they saw.
Ooh, awesome.
Yeah, I'll send that to you now. Okay, take
care. I love that stuff. See you, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. This is Conversation Radio, just in case you were wondering. And let's see who is where. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's happening, man?
I don't know much. It's always good to hear from Sandra.
Yeah, I think she's ready for some ball.
I think so.
And you know what? I'm ready. It has been a long, hot summer. And I'm ready to just be completely mindlessly diverted. I admit it. I'm shallow. I want one day a week where I can just go damn and recharge, you know?
Yeah. You know, I enjoy college ball, but I'm just waiting for my beloved Redskins to take the field and see what they can do.
You got any hope?
Actually, I do. This Beck kid seems to be the real deal, maybe. I hope.
Well, you know, it is wait and see. I mean, I guess, what, Donovan wanted to go to Minnesota, didn't he?
Yeah. And as Sam Huff always says, you know, live in hope, die in despair.
you remember
Sam Huff, don't you?
Oh yeah, and so does Jim Brown.
Oh yeah. Hard headed West Virginian.
Yeah, he's the one who told the story of every home in every coal camp in West Virginia had three photographs on the wall. Jesus Christ, John L. Lewis, and John F. Kennedy. Because that was the kind of home he grew up in.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's the post office. Isn't that in the
Constitution? Yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah.
But being in the Constitution has never slowed down a teabagger now, has it?
And
so's the general welfare.
And wasn't Ben Franklin one of the people, the person... It said, you know, that was one of the main impetuses for ditching the Confederacy and writing up the Constitution in the first place.
Well, I mean, as was noted in the Prism series, there were a lot of reasons. One of them was democracy was getting out of hand.
Well, yeah. But... considering Ben Franklin was the first postmaster.
You know, by the time the teabaggers would get done with him, he'd probably be a communist.
God. Well, considering that, you heard about the Texas history curriculum, right?
There's a new one?
Yeah. They mention Estee Lauder, but they don't mention Washington.
Hmm. Oh, no. Please, no, that's got to be a joke.
No, that's dead serious. Estee Lauder and Phyllis Schlafly are mentioned, but Washington isn't.
But I thought they just got done with their standards, Cossack.
No, this is a new one.
Because the other ones weren't weird enough?
Correct.
Jesus.
And with all these brilliant people deciding they're going to get rid of Social Security, what are you going to do with old farts like me?
Depends on how old an old fart like you is.
59?
Yeah, see, I don't, honestly, like I said with Sandra, I think they'll establish a window that goes to maybe 56, and nobody gets touched above it, and then it's a free market wonderland for everybody below it, and they're counting on the fact that they are dividing the forces to be significant enough to let them get the job done. But bear in mind, it's not going to be one fell swoop stuff. I don't think I've ever said that. This is going to be negative incrementalism at its absolute worst or finest, depending on how you view the process.
Oh, and speaking of Eric Cantor, you heard that no emergency funds for...
No, not without concomitant spending cuts.
Correct.
Really, Cossack, what... At this point, what is left to say about the people in his district?
Considering some of them were hit by Irene, I don't know.
And all of whom who felt the earthquake?
Exactly.
I mean, if I was a religious man, I'd be taking that very seriously. I wouldn't be in a humorous vein like Michelle Bachmann. But... No, I mean, this jackass is going to be up for re-election in November 2012. One, does the all-too-timid Democratic Party have a viable challenger for him? B, why aren't they already, maybe they are already, running ads about this in his district? And C, is it maybe time, Cossack, that this kind of advertising actually target the voters?
Yeah.
And by target the voters, I mean, and that sounds awful, I probably should pick a different word, focus on the voters by saying, you sent this guy to Congress. This is what he's done. Are you gonna do it again? If so, and there would probably have to be some focus group work with this, how damn dumb are you?
Yeah. Are you gonna let him do it to you again? You've been bent over and had... Are you gonna let it happen again?
Right.
I mean, jeez.
At what point? I mean, you're responsible for this. The rest of the, I don't know. Maybe that's what the script would say. The rest of the people of the United States are looking to the district of Virginia, understanding that you are the people responsible for sending that to the Congress of the United States. I guess that's just too confrontational, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. It needs to be.
Well, yeah, that's my point. I mean, we're getting perilously close to, and you know, run the same kind of ad in Minnesota. You have sicked that loopy, crazy, religiously hallucinated thing on us. What are we supposed to think of you? What happened to Minnesota Nice? How nice is that to do to the people, your fellow Americans?
Oh, by the way, it's the 7th District.
Of Virginia?
Yeah.
Jeebus. I mean, I don't think that's a crazy question to ask anymore.
No. I mean, yeah, the rest of the country is looking at Virginia and laughing because it's better to laugh than cry, but...
Right.
It's kind of ridiculous.
Well, more...
And, you know, to show you how idiotic these teabaggers are, a friend of my brother's, who has got three pensions, one federal, one military, Social Security, and he's militating for more of the same, for more cuts. You know, I keep on trying to say, don't you understand you're asking for them to cut your own pension? He doesn't. It doesn't penetrate. That's how stupid these people are. This literally does not penetrate their thick skulls. You know, this is like the jackass drill where the guy's literally sitting on the limb and sawing it off at the base. And he's sitting on it. And yes, people are that stupid.
I hate to admit it, but you're right. What?
You would imagine people would have enough common sense not to do something of this nature. Yet they do. And they do it with
and recognizing that they do, Cossack. The next question is, how do you break that pattern? I mean, the sanctity of the ballot box includes, I suppose, the sanctity of doing really stupid things in it.
Well, yeah. Bachman keeps getting elected.
Yeah.
Cantor keeps getting elected.
Steve King in Iowa.
Yeah.
That goofball. Yeah. Gohmert in Texas.
Yep.
You know, the terror babies guy.
The other king in New York.
Yeah. But, you know, if they're in Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, North, South Carolina, Kentucky, Texas, Oklahoma, those guys, and it's bad of me because it flies in the face of stuff that I actually preach. And that is, you know, my tendency to say, forget about it, it's Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
But really, there's some... Well, it goes back to what Dr. Dawkins said, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There are profound flaws within any system that allow not only for a person to... Well, I mean, you're going to have idiots. I mean, you've always got an idiot that's one going to run for an office. But there are profound flaws in a system that allow a person to actually be considered as a viable candidate. Michelle Bachman, Rick Perry, Rick Santorum. You know, they all fall within that category.
Oh, and you heard about the... verbal reaming that Dawkins gave to Perry.
Well, yeah, I read it on the show Friday night, I think.
Yeah. And there's an open and standing invitation for him to debate Perry.
Yeah, and that's not going to happen any more than Michelle Bachmann's gonna going to debate that 14-year-old.
Yeah.
For the very same reasons.
Yeah. You'd have, they'd have their rears handed to them.
Yeah.
God. Just.
I know. Crazy.
And, of course, it's retribution from the Lord that the hurricane descended upon New York City. New York City?
Yeah.
Well, howdy.
Hey, Cossack, I hate to say it. I got to roll on here.
All right. Let you run.
All right. We'll talk soon. All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And I hate to cut things short like that, but I'm going to have to cut the whole program short. There are matters back inside the house of a family nature that I have to deal with. We got through most of the show, though. That's always a bonus. So I will thank you all for your kind support of the program via your generous contributions, your gifts, via your participation. All the work that goes in on the part of the volunteers who make up the horn. Thank you. And I'll be back either Thursday evening or Friday. For sure Friday. Maybe Thursday. And, well, till then, take care. And I look forward to us talking again. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org is contained inside that address. Learn about it. Tell others about it, please. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Reverbo, our op-ed columnist. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, and many other things. Thanks to Ben Birch, who makes all the streams do what streams need to do in order for this program to reach you. WhiteRoseSociety.org. He never sends a bill, but he does need help. And always, 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 Gina, Judy. It's all for you.
Discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
I'm
minute past the hour, and we begin what will be a both truncated and foreshortened week of broadcasting. By that, I mean I ain't going to be here Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Okay? Sorry about that, but this seems like a worthy undertaking. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week, I will be in either en route to, en route from, or in Washington, D.C. It's another one of those whirlwind sort of things. But you know what? Sometimes voices come from whirlwinds, depending on whose holy book you're reading. And they can be rather important when they do. Not that I think that. No, you know what I mean. Now, tomorrow, a number of us are going up from here in almost level West Virginia. And we're going to go to Washington, D.C., and we are going to link up with our comrades who are struggling, our colleagues, for those who are off-put by the word comrades. I mean, I'm not going to say povarich or anything, but, well, some people just get a little, funny about comrade. No, we're going to link up with our colleagues, people who are being tormented by the extraction of the tar sands, who will be tormented by the building of the pipeline that runs from somewhere up in Alberta, Canada, all the way down to, Jeebus, Houston, Texas? Yeah. And which company planning to build said pipeline has already had a host of problems and spills. Ah, you know, I mean, they've done scientific engineering estimates, and they say, well, you know, we're not going to spill a lot of oil, just some every once in a while. Now and then. Sort of. Kind of. Yeah. So, it is, no, this concept is something that we have sort of been in the process of developing for a long time here, and that is the notion, and it happened organically. A number of years ago, coal companies said, listen, if you'll shut up about this mine, then we won't do that one. And you know what? I don't think anybody was fooled. But others might have been tempted by that. You know, they're going to leave this alone if they can just destroy that. But it was realized right then that such separate pieces are indeed the worst kinds of deals with the devil. That in fact, if we don't want to be blown up, we have no right to suggest that others be blown up in our stead. It reminds me of how conscription was handled in the North during the war, wherein if one was conscripted into the Union Army, one could pay someone else to go in one's place if one was wealthy enough, and thereby avoid service and avoid the hardship, the misery, the heartache, and yes, death that attended it all. Kind of like that. And so the process, as I said, was very organic as we realized that what's not okay to do to us is not okay to do to someone else. And now the folks in the struggle to end mountaintop removal have really gelled this concept and realize that it's not something that is merely local or regional or even national, that it is global. And so we say what's not all right to do to us in the form of mountaintop removal is not okay to do to Canadians, is not okay to do to the native peoples through whose lands these pipelines will pass. Is not okay to do to the people of Houston, Texas, where this damned thing, or any of the other states through which this damned thing will pass. And it's not okay to do to the rest of the citizens of the planet, who will pay with their health, their well-being, and indeed their very lives for the foolhardy, hateful notion of a little more oil company profit. So that's the purpose. That's the reason for going up there. Folks will be getting arrested on Wednesday, and I hope to be documenting some of that. I will certainly tell you about it upon my return. If we get back on Thursday early enough, I will tell you about it on Thursday evening show. But if we do not, then I will certainly tell you on the front porch on Friday. Okay? I hope that works out. This feels really, this really does feel like an important moment for making a very, very critical connection. Coal is the single filthiest hydrocarbon fossil fuel available for use on the planet. Oil is next. And among so-called oils, the tar sands are just about the nastiest of the nasty. This goo won't even float without being heated. It won't move. It has the viscosity of molasses in January. No, really. They got to cook it some to get it to move in the pipeline. By the way, the emergency shutoff valves for that pipeline are something on the order of 20 miles apart. What could possibly go wrong with 20-mile gaps in being... Well, come on. So you see the urgency. So we're going to be up there, a number of us. Bo Webb, Mickey McCoy, and I are traveling together tomorrow. And I look forward to getting there and talking to so many people of goodwill who understand the urgency with which this is being met. And I reiterate, I approach it from a standpoint of human rights. For it is my position that human beings have a right not to be tormented in the name of some godforsaken shareholder's profit, or even more godforsaken CEO's $15,000 gold-plated shower curtain, or whatever obscenity seems to be, grabs their fancy at any given moment. You get my point. And there is indeed a real sense of urgency attending all of this. You know that the State Department has said, pipeline? Great. Sounds wonderful. Canadians want it. Why shouldn't we? And it is awaiting President Obama's signature. Just to, you know, pass holy writ on it, and away they'll go, and because it's going to mean some jobs. Jobs. That's J-A-W-B-Z-Z-Z, jobs. Because that is the measure of all things in America now. Jobs! Don't matter what kind of jobs. You know, over there we got some jobs, poison fetuses. And over here we got us some jobs in the hydrocarbon energy industry that's going to poison us some nine-year-old little girls so their insides won't work right and their babies will come out looking like they shot out a small-bore cannon when they get around to having cheerings. But these jobs, we got to have them. You know, I have yet to hear of any birth defects attending proximity to windmills. I haven't yet heard a single story of a cancer-causing solar panel or someone having to have an organ removed because they got too close to a geothermal installation. But all some hydrocarbon thug, some hydrocarbon fossil fool has to do is say, you know what? We're going to go and mess around in some poison in Canada, and we're going to poison all kinds of people in Canada, and we just want to have the opportunity in the name of, well, we're going to create some jobs, jobs, poisoning people. Got jobs, you hear me? Jobs is what I'm talking about. Jobs. We're going to poison some people, passing through the Lakota lands, and we're going to poison some people. Maybe, who knows, down Missouri way, we're going to poison some people in Arkansas. Oh, we might have to poison some people in Iowa way. But they're jobs. And all the little politicians.
So, what was that? Did you say something about jobs? Oh, goodness me, jobs.
Never stopping to wonder why there aren't any good jobs, any clean jobs, any green jobs. And in fact, there are people who would tell you that there aren't any green jobs. There's a classic example of that. I was reading over at Ken Ward's Coal Tattoo the other day. Found it quite fascinating. Lo and behold, that's exactly what was argued recently. It's rather astonishing, really. Ken Ward noting in his blog, that it has been asserted that the green jobs movement and sector is somehow insufficient. Well, it's just failing. That it's not what it's supposed to be. Only it turns out it's exactly not what was being said. In particular, what Ken Ward notes at Coal Tattoo is that I got to get through this it's a New York Times story. And the claim made is number of green jobs fails to live up to promises. And it cites a Brookings Institution report that said clean technology jobs accounted for just 2% of employment nationwide and only slightly more, 2.2% in Silicon Valley. Okay. Well, enter a guy named Joseph Rahm. Joseph Rahm is cited by Ken Ward. And he says, talk about a bait and switch. The New York Times cites the Brookings Institution study, but then pulls out one tiny piece of it to make the exact opposite argument of the study. Brookings actually found that nationwide from 2003 to 2010, the clean economy grew by 8.3%. Almost double what the overall economy grew during those years. Mark Murrow is a senior fellow at the Brookings Metropolitan Program, co-author of the report. He says the pace of growth really is torrid in that sector. This confirms the intuition that these exciting industries really are growing as fast as we think they are. And he said, we all wonder sometimes whether it's worth giving, pay attention here. Because this has to do not with whether or not there's a growing green economy, but whether or not the for-profit media will report it accurately. You'll see what I mean. He says, we all wonder sometimes whether it is worth giving extended interviews to reporters, knowing that they may just pick out one or two words or phrases that match their desired narrative. Fortunately, most get it right. But right now, with Obama down in the polls, overall job creation slow, and the fossil fuel-funded disinformers pushing lies about clean energy, many in the media want to tell yet another story of how Obama failed. He goes on to say this, the narrative in the New York Times story is just false. Clean energy jobs have soared in recent years, by no small part to Obama's stimulus bill, as well as the business community's understanding of the threat posed by climate change, something the article is silent on. The promise of millions of clean energy jobs was always based on the passage of policies that the GOP have so far successfully torpedoed. Yes, Obama deserves some blame for the failure of those policies, but I have always said that it is under 10% of the blame. Some 60% belongs to the right wing and its disinformers, with another 30% to the media itself themselves for failing to tell the story. It is the realities of global warming and peak oil that ensure the world will generate millions of clean energy jobs in the coming decade, and for more than and far more than that in the ensuing decades when we get truly serious. This remains the story of the decade and the century. And thus the question, why can't Appalachia have some of that? The obvious answer, we're not supposed to. We are the little fiefdom of the coal industry, and if we don't like it, we can screw it. Or actually get screwed. So, all of that, but mostly the human rights aspect, is part and parcel of why I'm heading out tomorrow. And I hope you will be patient and join me for conversation either Thursday or Friday. Friday for certain. Thursday's kind of maybe-ish. Like I said, it just depends. You know, it's tough to get out of a 300-mile car drive and just run in and jump behind the microphone. It's just it's difficult. Ron is feeling froggy this evening. He says, but Bob, you forgot about the death of migratory birds and bats at the blades of the wind turbines. You're just too cruel to forget about our feathered and furred friends. Bat ceviche is what I call it. Now, you think I've forgotten, don't you? But I haven't. It's the beginning of the week, you know, which means it's Monday, which means that we've had an entire weekend, and I hope yours was lovely. Mine was. Up east, not so much. Hurricane Irene was very, very real. Although, I guess Barack Obama is already being blamed by the right wing for not for having overreacted to a hurricane. For the wing nuts, and I know they're not listening or anything, but I'm just asking. Maybe you could pass the question along. Somebody can give me an answer. There's a word for people who under-prepare for a hurricane. Do the little wing nuts know what that word is? Just say, dead. Dead. The word for people who under-prepare for hurricanes is dead. You know what? You should always over-prepare for a hurricane. Because over-preparing for a hurricane means that you've got a better chance of being, feeling chagrined or whatever at the after the hurricane is gone rather than feeling dead. Which is a state, really, of not feeling at all when you get right down to it. But for my part, and I don't want to sound like an ass or anything, because it comes all too natural to me, frankly. But Saturday, Ferg and I stood out in the yard, And we watched this band of clouds that I swear was no more than 500 feet above the mountaintops. Just absolutely cooking. In the wrong direction. And we stood there and we stared at it and we cogitated on it a minute. And then, you know, I wasn't saying anything. I was going to let it come to him. He said, finally he looked at me and said, Dad, is that the hurricane? I said, those are the outer bands of the hurricane, son. Because every now and then, you know, for a little while, the wind would come from the north, and then the wind would come from the northwest, and then it would come from the south and the southeast. And it was the outer bands of the thing swirling past us. And so Ferg had this little meteorological epiphany. And so did I. Just sitting there on the picnic table, and because it'd be sunny, then just gray as doom, and then sunny some more. Not so much as a drop of rain, and I didn't have to chase a single shingle. Ooh, I got past that one without stumbling. Single shingle. Don't take me for granted. Things like that, you know, you can hurt yourself trying to say things like single shingle on the fly. Which also sounds like a punk band, or maybe, I don't know, maybe a band made up of lawyers, single shingle. But, no, absolutely quiet here. Yeah, Ferg, what do you need, buddy?
I'm getting the guitar because I'm going to noodle on the song Amy.
Noodling, are we?
Well, knowing the song.
Well, as long as you're not boondoggling.
There's a difference. There is a difference.
And when you use the pick, what are you going to do with the pick?
Put it back.
Put the pick back. That's right. We're going to put the pick back.
I won't drop it in your guitar again. I swear.
Okay, thank you.
Love you, Dad. Love you, listeners.
Yeah, he's gotten to that point where he wants to get hugs and kisses. Jeez. Teenagers. They need to, well, no, they're not going to come out with a drug for that. But, well, anyway. So I hope everybody had as few harrowing moments as did we here. But I think it's likely that many of you didn't up east. Jesus, it looked ugly in Vermont. But no, I do know what day it is. It's Monday. It's Moran Monday. Oh, wait. Yeah, Ferg did like the tune. Ron sent a tune along for Ferg to check out. Ron says, how about this? And lo, he stood in the midst of the wind and calmed them. I think that's what the wingnuts wanted, but according to them, he's not the Messiah. I wish these dolts would make up their minds. No, that's the thing. They didn't. If he'd done that, he would have been a false prophet. And probably a Muslim, Kenyan, anti-colonialist false prophet. You got to understand how this whole thing just shakes out. I wonder if Pat Robertson was waiting for the Washington Monument to go over. But you know, right? You know about Michelle Bachmann. This just not at all well strapped down woman, crazy lunatic. Yeah, they can't resist it. They're so deep into their religious sickness. They just can't help it. She was talking in Florida, Michelle Bachmann was. It's Moran Monday. I'm not going to play the music because there's too much crazy as it is. No. And it's too late to head to the hills. We are up to our armpits in Morans. This is still, however, the program that helps you tell the Morans. You just can't tell them much. And making sure that this program continues to get out is still dirt cheap. Less than 5 cents per hour of programming once you sort it all out. We are closing on the end of the month of August, and we are within striking distance of actually making our monthly goal. It's taken a lot of help, and your challenges have been a big part of it. We still need $20 more, I believe, to meet John's snail mail challenge. Correct me if I'm wrong. But $20 more, will, and that'll mean instead of a $100 contribution, that'll make a $200 contribution by John's snail mail challenge. The snail mail address is at headonradionetwork.com. You can find it under the Contribute tab. I'll repeat it now. It's 1038. It's the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, P as in Paul, M as in Mary, B as in boy, PMB 318. Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, West Virginia, 25801. 25801. But let's see, what would it take? It would take 30 people. 30 people tonight at $10 apiece, and we can be done with the month of, we will actually have reached our goal, which will be huge, considering how tough June and July were for obvious reasons. So, if you would consider that as we round out the month of August, I won't be here to do the end of August tomorrow night, so we'll just do it tonight, okay? But no, it was in Florida. It was in Florida that Michelle Bachmann, this loopy, crazy, evil woman, offered her analysis of why hurricanes happen. And I'm still not okay with it. And yeah, we've talked a good bit about fundamentalist religion the last two or three episodes of the program. And I don't mean to, I don't set out for it to be that way, but it's kind of hard to avoid when it's up in your face, because these religion industry fundamentalists, these evil dominionists, these people who spank their children to death because God wants them to, they won't leave us normal people alone. They insist on their right to be in our faces. Because otherwise they're getting persecuted if we ask them to just sit down and shut the hell up for a little bit. Or to do it in their own churches and leave the rest of us out of it. No, Michelle Bachmann was in Sarasota, Florida, when she said the following, as reported by the St. Petersburg Times.
I don't know how much God has to do to get the attention of the politicians. We've had an earthquake. We've had a hurricane. He said, are you going to start listening to me here? Listen to the American people, because the American people are roaring right now. They know government is on a morbid obesity diet, and we've got to rein in the spending.
I couldn't have written something that hateful if I had set out to try to write something in the voice of Michelle Bachmann. This poisonous, toxic, dirt, ignorant woman. How many people are dead from Irene? 21? Was that the number? More? Less? Does it matter? Except to say that people are dead from Irene? And they're dead, so her brutal, vicious, arbitrary and capricious, hate-filled juvenile delinquent in the sky could send a message to some politicians to tell them to quit wasting money on things like Social Security and Medicare. Do you see how the twisted, sick, anti-reasoning of the right-wing works?
Well, it's not God's fault. If those liberal politicians would have just cut off Granny's Social Security and Medicare, God wouldn't have had to have killed Granny with a hurricane. Mysterious are his ways. Praise be to Almighty God, worlds without end. Amen and amen.
You think I'm making that up? I have a clip here from Michelle Bachmann at something called Spirit Midwest Christian Music Festival. And I'm not exactly sure when it took place. Isaac sent this to me. And I tweeted it, and there's been some discussion on the Twitter about what exactly Michelle Bachmann is saying. But on first listen, on second listen, and third through fifth listen, it sounds an awful lot. Well, you'll hear it. You tell me what she's saying. It has been said to me that she's not saying what I thought she was saying. But even if she's not saying what it sounds like she's saying, and I know we're getting lost in that, even if she's saying what other people are saying she's saying, why is she saying it? The hell does it mean? Is it speaking in tongues, word salad babble? And if that's the case, where's the person with the gift of translation? Well, enough setup. Let's just hear the crazy. Now, this YouTube video comes from a YouTuber by the name of On Knees for Jesus 3. And this YouTube provides a convenient bit of, well, it puts the words up there for what you just heard.
Oh, thank you, Jason. Who likes white people?
Yeah, sounds like who likes white people to me, too. But even Michelle Bachmann wouldn't say something that loony, would she? Who likes white people? Hey! Huh? Because, you know, she said crap that crazy before. But no, the debate seems to be that she was saying, who likes wet people? Because I guess she was in Waterloo, Iowa, or somewhere that it was raining. You can see a big blue tarp in the foreground of the video. Although this being a radio show, you'll just have to take my word for that unless you're running off to see the thing now, in which case I've lost you. I hope that's not the case. Who likes white people? Who likes wet people? Well, okay. Either one's pretty weird. You know, I like wet people, especially people who are wet just because they've just been baptized in the name of Christ Jesus. No, I wish there was that much of a tie together. Me, I'm camped out and waiting for, like I said, the day she campaigns in Ottumwa, Iowa, and says, and I would be remiss if I didn't note today that we're here in Ottumwa, Iowa, the home of that famous Korean War hero, Walter Radar O'Reilly. Let's hear it for Radar. I'm sorry, Ottumwa, Iowa is stuck in my brain because how many times did that character mention that he was from Ottumwa, Iowa on MASH? And yes, I'm that old. But no, this is her talking to her kind of people, whether they be white or wet, or wet white. And she speaks that sort of contorted dog whistle language. You'll hear it. You'll understand. for you have been given the gift of translation.
About the creator of the universe, our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, isn't that even a little bit of a theological stretch? Because, well, I mean, you've got to, don't you have to go through all that Trinity mathematics to get to creator of the universe, Jesus Christ? Because wasn't that his dad that did that? You know, the one that raped the teenager? Right, you know the rest of the theology. Creator of the universe, Jesus Christ. Okay, keep going, Michelle.
I was born here in Iowa. I was born in Waterloo and Cedar Falls, and we were...
Now, wait. You can have one or the other, but not both, Michelle. You were not born in Waterloo and Cedar Rapids. I mean, that's a kind of sort of theological math that goes past mangers, isn't it? It was so popular when I was born in Waterloo, they moved over and did it again, just crammed me right back up there, and then, yeah, I was born in Cedar Rapids, too. And that's not fooling around with the audio. She says that kind of stuff. Like I said, it's just babblicious word salad.
Cedar Falls, and we were at church.
It's a hell of a memory she's got to know that she was born at church. And let's not judge.
I was born here in Iowa. I was born in Waterloo and Cedar Falls, and we were a church-going family in Waterloo and Cedar Falls.
So I guess that's four times on Sundays. Waterloo and Cedar Falls, you get up, you go to Sunday school, and how does that work? Or maybe they were doing morning services in Waterloo and then evening Sunday services in Cedar Falls, and I guess they flipped a coin midweek to see where they'd go to prayer meeting on Wednesday.
I'm so grateful for my parents and my grandparents, going back to seven generations of Iowans who were all people of faith. I didn't have a relationship with Jesus Christ. They were right. And so I was going to a prayer meeting before school at our high school.
And you thought I was just kidding when I called a prayer meeting.
Going to a prayer meeting before school at our high school. We would go to that prayer meeting. My friends did a wonderful thing for me. They started praying for me. They started praying that I would come to know Jesus Christ. How many of you just love and appreciate praying friends? They're worth the world. And that changed me forever, and I'm so grateful for what God has done. And one thing that I've learned over the years is that God is not partial. So by faith, Jonathan and his soldier friend climbed the cliff all the way up. They got to the outpost where the Philistines were standing. They took down those Philistines.
Took them down? They took down those Philistines? Well, first of all, we need to go. Well, no, we'll just take it. We'll take it on faith that it's Philistines and not Edomites or Elamites or Moabites or Canaanites or any of the others that were slain by the all-loving God. But no, took them down. Michelle, honey, they were put to the sword. They were butchered. They were killed. But not in the name of Jesus Christ. You've got the wrong religion there, honey. They were killed in the name of Yahweh, Yahweh, you know, that guy. Jehovah. Yeah. Jehovah, Jehovah. But it's always fun when we get to story time with Michelle Bachman. Because she mentions Jonathan. I wonder if she's ever read that whole part about, you know, because Jonathan was the son of Saul, the king of Israel, the first king of Israel. And Jonathan palled around with David a lot. Palled around with, you know, that's one of those Godzilla from Wasilla phrases. And if you read the story there, all you find out is that Saul became greatly wroth with David, and it doesn't say why. And David and Jonathan were like that, you know, really good friends, longtime companions.
And what was amazing is that Jonathan and his compatriot soldier took the entire army down. And it began with the courage of two young men who put their faith and their trust in an almighty God. And so that's my message for all of the young people here tonight. He is...
Go kill the Philistines? Well, no.
Powerful to save. He reaches out his hand to draw us to his side, and then he says, trust me. Give your life over to him now while there is yet time. Jesus Christ, trust him in all his ways. He is worthy to be trusted. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle. So, just to be clear, that loving God who gave Jonathan the power to go down on, take down an entire army, killed people because politicians are spending too much money. I don't know how much God has got.
I don't know how much God has got to do to get the attention of the politicians. We've had an earthquake. We've had a hurricane. He said, are you going to start listening to me here?
Yeah. Now, of course, her press flack is saying, obviously she was saying it in jest.
How the hell can you tell? Who likes wet people? Who likes white people? I want to live in the Waterloo, Iowa that John Wayne lived in, only it was John Wayne Gacy. And then the next thing you know, a dude's getting his the skull crushed like a melon because people are hollering faggot at him.
Kind of Waterloo, Iowa.
How can you tell when she's joking?
Now, not except for the fact that the idea of an America with a President Bachman is something that fills you and I with a sort of bowel-watering, sick dread. And we know what an idiot she is. Well, I mean, and by that, I'm not trying to insult her. I mean idiot within the Clinical Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, 4th edition, definition of idiot. We know that she's laying it on thick, and we know that she's running a, you know, she's doing her shtick. Right? But here's the important thing. If she was only joking there, how were her equally not terribly intelligent followers supposed to know? Is there a little lodge sign? Does she tug at her ear like Carol Burnett? How do we, because was there, it was, did the reporter just not do a good job of saying, they know government is on a morbid obesity diet and we've got to rein in the spending. And the reporter for St. Petersburg Times, which of course I'm sure has a lot of that liberal bias, just didn't bother to transcribe, and then she winked and stuck her elbow out. And, you know, wiggled one toe and said, just kidding, only that didn't make it into the story. If it's all, here's the question. If that kind of bizarre Bible babble is all just joking, one, who is she mocking? Us or her God? And two, what does that say about someone who would make jokes about people being killed by hurricanes and ascribing it to a supreme deity? But it's all just a big joke, because she's a big joker. Having been asked about her comments that God sent the hurricane to send America a message by killing innocent victims,
She said, our hearts and prayers go out to the families of the victims. This isn't something that we take lightly. My comments were not to be ones that were taken lightly.
See, it's that liberal. It's your fault. It's the liberal media's fault. Because
you were taking them lightly. What I was saying in a humorous vein.
Wait, if it's in a humorous vein, doesn't that mean it's supposed to be taken lightly? Because it's a joke?
What I was saying in a humorous vein.
You know, that's the one that runs up right through your elbow. That's where the humorous is. You know.
Is that there are things happening that politicians need to pay attention to. It isn't every day we have an earthquake in the United States.
Dear Jesus, please don't make a bottle of Jim Beam appear in my tequila or in gin or anything appear in my hands right now, because I'm going to down it upright. My comments were not meant to be the ones that were taken lightly. What I was saying in a humorous vein is there are things happening that politicians need to pay attention to. You know what? I think there's some truth in that article I read last week. That remark from Richard Dawkins. Dr. Dawkins. To the extent that there, to the effect that there is something profoundly wrong with the political system of a country that will let a woman like this, not a woman, but a woman like this, get within even considering distance of the presidency of the United States of America. Betsy, ever the forgiving one, says, I don't have a problem with Michelle going to church in two towns. I go to different synagogues Friday night and Saturday, depending on what I'm doing professionally, who's having a bar mitzvah and so on. But a presidential candidate preaching like this? Oi! I have a big problem with that. But Betsy, it's not just that she was born in two places, too. I know, I understand the scenario that you're laying out, but she was born in two places. And that's gotta hurt. Everybody involved. It's like it's some sort of damn road show. All right, we're done in Waterloo. Pack her back in. Let's get over to Cedar Falls. There are enough people who think, or, well, that's the closest approximation of a word we can... There are enough people who are on the same wavelength as Michelle Bachmann not to win an election, but certainly to screw a country. Well, Gene's in rare form tonight, too. My, my. Representative Bachmann must have a very wide stance. Holy God, can you imagine the stirrups? Well, that would be for, yeah, Mrs. Bachmann, Michelle's mother. Get her back in there, we're off to Cedar Falls. By God, if it plays there, we're on to Peoria. Hang on, Ethel. But how's this going to play, this idea that she, well, again, it's dog whistling. Her followers and the fundamentalists and the dominionists and the literalists, they know she wasn't joking. They believe in a hate-filled, vengeful God that smites innocent people to prove a point that, you know, Social Security is a cruel Ponzi scheme or some other mendacious piece of crap. Their God does that kind of thing. Because he can. You've read Job. Don't make me go over Job again. Basically, Job gets to the end of it after the boils, the locusts, the frogs, the killing off all of his children and the afflicting him and the heartbreak of psoriasis and gets God, finally Job's. Why? I'm the good guy, remember? And God answers from the whirlwind and says, because I can. Who the hell are you to ask me? With, respond to being, with respect to being told about Jeebus by Michelle Bachman, Clayton says, I can read about him myself. I don't need anyone to tell me about Jeebus, let alone that one. Yeah, and there's so much, you know, there's so much more. It is more Ann Monday. And we got, oh, Jeebus, we do have more Anns. I got one more Ann before we go, before we take a break. Oh, by the way, Michelle Bachman has said she would consider drilling in the Everglades for Earl oil. But while we're out there with the fundamentalists crazy, we've done a Protestant. Let's make sure that we give the Roman Catholics their due. And their boy, Bro Fromix, Rick Santorum. You remember a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about his struggle to find a parable of why two guys who love each other should not be able to get married, or two women who love each other should not be able to get married. Well, the struggle continues. You remember he started out with the parable of the napkin, saying that a napkin is not a paper towel, and then he went to the parable of the water, and the water is not beer. Neither of those were working out, so he went for a cup of tea is not a basketball. That wasn't sinking in, so he went to a tree is not a car. Now, I got 2 minutes of Bro Fromix here, Rick Santorum. Well, you're just going to have to hear it to believe it. Sorry.
I said, this is an app. What is an app? This is an app. A napkin is what a napkin is. It isn't a paper towel. It isn't a car. You can call a napkin a car, but it doesn't make it a car. You can call a paper towel a chair, but it doesn't make it a chair.
Right.
Marriage is what marriage is. It existed before there was the English language or a state. It is something that was given to us from the very beginning of time. It is something universal in every culture. And it has been remarkably consistent in every culture. Why? Because it reflects nature and nature's God. Not only have I taken on the gay and lesbian community, but you may recall back in 2003, I believe it was, there was a case up before the United States Supreme Court. It's one that has made me famous in the gay and lesbian, I shouldn't say famous, infamous in the gay and lesbian community. It was called Lawrence versus Texas. I gave an interview about it before the case was decided. And I said, if the case is decided that says that this law is unconstitutional, the court says this law is unconstitutional because adults, consenting adults, have the right to sexual activity, any consensual activity, then we will see not only marriage destroyed, but you will see ultimately the faith community destroyed and being ghettoized as bigots because they stand up and preach biblical truth. I said, if the Supreme Court says that you have the right to consensual sexual activity, then you have the right to incest, you have the right to polygamy, you have the right to all of these other sexual variations. And so the gay community said, he's comparing gay sex to incest and polygamy. How dare he do this? And they have gone out on a jihad against Rick Santorum since then. Rick Perry said, it's fine with me. Michelle Bachman said, it's none of my business. Well, let me assure you, it's my business. It's all of our business.
I kind of wish whoever was cutting that audio would have let the clapping continue, because just to remind us that that wasn't just some guy at the end of the bar babbling away. Yeah, your love life, your attachment to another human being is Rick Santorum's business. Marriage or no marriage, it's his business. Does he set off your latent sneeter just a little bit? Just a little bit? These sexual variations. Isn't that one of those tawdry little magazines that's all begin, "Dear editor, I never thought it would happen with me and that girl in the..." Right. Yeah. That's the stuff that's too racy for Penthouse Letters. Morris sent along a selection of the finer responses from the TPM Talking Points memo article about jihad. Jihad, really. You know, they have two fetishes, Muslims and gay people. And that now Rick Santorum is at the point where he's conflating the two for greater effect. What? Considering that Santorum has a long history of spewing anti-gay nonsense, this is the fridge calling the stove Harvest Gold. Harvest Gold just slayed me. I prefer avocado. Remember the avocado? Yeah. It would appear, campaign-wise, that Rick Santorum is a one-dick pony. Ooh, that's good. Santorum has been getting a lot of practice lately, dragging around that big, heavy cross. Pretty soon he'll be able to take the little training wheels off and go full martyr. Who hasn't eyed a well-coiffed poodle and thought, "There is a creature that needs my company. Let he who is without sin cast the first dog bone." I had a little cackle fest the first time through with that. "Let he who is without sin..." Harvest Gold. Jeebus. The Morans are, in fact, out in full flower, I guess, aren't they? Michael writing in from Sebastopol. Santorum. That little kid in the house. We don't talk about those things in front of tots. So, we go forward. Your calls are coming up next. A couple of lines yet open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, BobKincaid@gmail.com. I was going to go for Rod Stewart's "I Was Only Joking" in honor of Michelle Bachman saying she was only joking, but you know what? In a humorous vein. But it was, I checked it out. It was too downbeat. So instead, well, who knows? Dadgummit. She may be a pompous, and this, most assuredly, is the horn, and we'll be right back.
Some people call me the space cowboy, yeah. Some call me the gangster of love. Some people call me Maurice, because I speak of the pompous of love.
Maybe that could be Marcus.
People talk about me, baby. Say I'm doing you wrong, doing you wrong. Well, don't you worry, baby, don't worry. Cause I'm right here, right here, right here, right here at home. Cause I'm a picker, I'm a grinner, I'm a lover. I'm a sinner. I play my music in the sun. I'm a joker. I'm a smoker. I'm a midnight toker. I give my love and all.
lovey-dovey all the time.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Past the hour, we go straightway to the phones in just a second. But a reminder, go to crmw.net, crmw.net, that is the Coal River Mountain Watch homepage. Avail yourself, if you can, of membership there. In becoming a member of Coal River Mountain Watch, if you have not already, you will thereby be a member of one of the most, if not the most, in-your-face, unapologetic, no-retreat, no-surrender organizations fighting for and struggling for essential human rights in Appalachia, and by extension, everywhere else that exists. Membership is cheap, and you really will be part of the solution. CRMW. Net. A couple of emails before we do go on to the phones, and let's run through here quickly. Ron and Raleigh noting, with regard to marriage, it's obvious that Bro Fromix has no knowledge of the history of marriage. From the beginning of time, the Israelites practiced polygamy for Yahweh's sake. Oh, and then there's all kinds of polyandries and matriarchies and linear families, and yeah, it has been remarkably consistent. You know, I guess nobody's ever explained to Rick Santorum that simply saying something doesn't make it so. By the way, Isaac let me know that there is in fact a Michelle Bachman memoir coming out in November. No word if it's going to be out in comic book form. That was hard to resist. A little something as well, a separate topic from Andy. He says, listening to some podcasts, you mentioned the PayPal, another data point. PayPal will not accept my debit card, so I had to abandon trying to use it. I sent you a small check. You can put it towards the matching snail mail contest you had going on. So in that case, we're done. In addition, yes, hallelujah, the matching is done. Thank you very, very kindly. To all of you who matched John's offer, I have told Boss Man Wayne about it, and he will be tallying them up so that I can write back to John. In addition, Andy says, yes, PayPal is another way to wring more fees out of the citizenry, and its owner, eBay, is a great example of fascism in action by policy. The place that spawned Meg Whitman, ex-gubernatorial candidate of California. Andy says, I've met folks from eBay. None of them were from the U.S. It always bothers me with all the unemployment in the native population. Why would a company bring in foreign workers? Oh, I forgot. H-1Bs, which is what they were. Work for less, no problem. We're happy to be in America. PayPal and its parent are in the vanguard of the war against working people. Thanks, Andy. And I understand all of those problems. But we, too, have a problem. And the problem we have here is that everyone, without fail, I have yet to find one that does not charge 3%. Okay? That's basically $3 on the 100. Buck and a half on 50. 75 cents on 25, that kind of thing. Everybody, there are non-profit transfer companies out there that deal with non-profit organizations. I was surprised to find out, and I found this out last year, they charge $3 on 100. There's a little passage in Kurt Vonnegut's Sirens of Titan. No, it's not Sirens of Titan. It's, it's either Sirens of Titan, God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, or Breakfast of Champions. Might be Breakfast of Champions. But anyway, there's a lawyer who, there's an explanation by a lawyer that if one can dip one's finger into the stream of commerce and take a little bit during the transfer process, one can get very, very wealthy without ever having to do much of anything. And that is a model that is almost universal at this point. and without some means of electronic funds transfer, the horn, the horn can go away. I don't like them, but the thing is, there's no, to the best of my knowledge, no Sparkle Pony company out there that is ideologically pure enough that we could say, yay, us. So what we're trying to do is eventually just add more options. But there will be a transfer fee with all of them, because they all charge one, because it's an administration fee or whatever. You know how it goes. But, yeah, the guy who founded PayPal is a lunatic libertarian who wants to form little Ayn Rand islands. I saw a tweet earlier today that goes back to Hurricane Irene that noted that came from a teabagging, fiscal conservatism, John Galt, Atlas Shrugger, who was tweeting while standing in line waiting for free sandbags from the government. And we're probably absolutely clueless to the irony of all of that. Email came in also from our buddy John in upstate New York. The blog on Washington Post is rapidly turning into a great source. Bachman Crazy Overdrive, BCO. Bachman Crazy Overdrive now says the hurricane was God's punishment for the late D.C. shenanigans. A few things. First, isn't she as a politician part of that problem? Why, yes, John, yes. Second, couldn't allegedly all-powerful God smite a bit more selectively? Why kill, in this case, two children in order to punish recalcitrant politicians? Yeah, well, the Lord works in mysterious ways. Mysterious? How about mean and stupid? Third, of course, is this dead end of blame and responsibility that we've talked about before. If we think that God judges and punishes and fixes all that's wrong, then we on earth are absolved of any need to right the wrongs. I find it a repulsive philosophy. I agree with you, John. It's along the same lines as somebody who still uses that very, very hateful word in Mississippi, going to see the help and saying, see, that's how it was, but it's not that way anymore, and it's all better, and it's fixed, and we don't have to worry about it no more. It's the same principle. Jenny just wrote in and said, Bob, instead of 30 people at $10, I thought maybe 10 people at $30. So I sent in my 30. Thanks for going to D.C. for all of us. Thank you, Jenny. Otherwise known as Polka Fan in the chat room. That would work equally well. $10 at 30, 10 people at $30, it works every bit as well as 30 people at $10. I'm just trying to, 60 people at $5. However we can make it go. I'm sorry your call dropped, Susan. When a line opens up, hopefully you can get back in.
Hey.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Hey, Juanita.
Michelle Bachman is also for lowering minimum wage.
Why am I not surprised?
That's very Christian of her, ain't it?
Well, isn't it? Now, okay, let's go through this real quick, Juanita. Isn't there that parable out there that says that a man hired a man in the morning for an amount, and he hired a man at noon for an amount, the same amount, and he hired a man, and at the end of the day, the guy came back and said, hey, wait a minute. That guy got paid for two-thirds less of the work that I did for the same money.
Yeah.
I never understood. What does that parable mean?
I can't tell you, Bob. I have to think about it. I don't know.
I think it's meant to illustrate the fact that all shall be equal in the kingdom of God or something, but it certainly isn't an accurate representation of fairness on earth.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't hear the first part of the program, because
mm-hmm.
I was in and out. And I wondered if you got any of the hurricane
No. All we got was a gentle breeze in late August that was unseasonably pleasant.
Yeah. Well, you know, now they're saying it was big hype.
Yeah, and they're saying that Barack Obama tried to terrify America.
Yeah.
How about trying to get America? Well, I mean, you live in hurricane country. You know what happens when people don't prepare, right?
Yeah.
They die.
When I was growing up, yeah. When I was little and all, and was growing up, and we had some hurricanes, and we would listen. You know, they're complaining about the coverage too, but we would listen to the radio till the batteries or whatever we had. I think, oh, the electricity would go off, yeah.
Yeah.
Till we couldn't.
And then the batteries eventually go out, too.
Yeah. But I listened to that. And they did do some repeating, but it, did you see what happened to Vermont?
Oh, it was awful.
They said every road in the state is affected.
And, of course, Eric Cantor says too bad for Vermont because, you know, Eric Cantor hates Vermont because they've got that communist medicine socialized up there and stuff, right?
Well, yeah, and they got those communist people up there, too. Bernie Sanders and so forth. But,
well, but, you know, it's not just Eric Cantor.
No.
Is Ron Paul on something, Juanita? I mean, here's a man. I mean, let's just for background's sake, here's a man whose congressional district includes Galveston, Texas.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Now this guy says he wants to go back to 1900, when we all took care of each other, and that FEMA is a drag on the budget. But he specifically said 1900, Juanita, and that's very important in this discussion.
I heard him, yeah.
Now, in 1900, the worst hurricane ever to hit the United States came ashore at Galveston.
Yeah.
It killed between 6,000 and 12,000 human beings.
Yeah.
We still don't know for sure how many. And that is what Ron Paul wants to go back to? You know, I've got an email from one of those weird right-wing emails asking me to interview somebody who is pushing the idea that Democrats should switch over and be Republicans in the primary and go and vote for Ron Paul. I mean, could you get a Democrat? I don't know. Maybe you could. Could you get a Democrat to go vote for somebody that likes it when 6,000 to 12,000 people die in a hurricane? I mean, that just makes my eyeballs roll back in my head and go, you know, because.
Well, we'll see how many more Republicans come out repeating what he said. I'm sorry I'm stuttering, but. But, you know, Rubio?
Yeah.
From Florida?
Yeah, Mark Rubio, the teabagger.
Did you hear his little speech about Social Security?
Oh, no.
Well, he said that it was to discourage people and, we needed to go back to where, you know, people helped one another out. Well, I can remember where people helped one another out, but they couldn't afford to pay all their bills and give them a standard of my month. You know what I'm saying?
I sure do.
But they got that kind of, and he when he was running for election, he was talking about how, you know, his folks came from Cuba and how Social Security really helped them out, you know, the parents and all, you know.
But we've just outgrown it now. Is that what it is?
I don't know, but see, you know. And they're going to really come out with trying to say that when we passed Obamacare, you know what they call it, that they took out millions or billions from the program. And they're going to try to make people believe that. And you know how they do. They just keep repeating it.
You know how, I don't know if you've noticed this or not. You want to know how stupid some American people are, Juanita? The United States Postal Workers Union is having to run ads right now just telling people, and for the most part, you've got to figure it's teabaggers they're talking to. Hey! Your taxes don't pay to run the postal service, okay?
Yeah.
Because apparently teabaggers don't like the post office. For heaven's sakes. I mean, doesn't that just make you want to... The post office,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's amazing. And...
I mean, because these clowns and these teabaggers and whatever, I guess they've never actually priced what it costs to send a letter via Federal Express or UPS or any of those other companies.
Oh, yeah, I know. Or anything.
You know what? I had to do that one time, and I did it. And I was out like $20.
Yeah.
And I vowed that day that I would never complain about the price of United States Postal Service postage again so long as I live, and I haven't.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
really...
Even what it is now, you know.
Yeah, but that's the point. Even if it's 60 cents a stamp,
yeah,
that's still something like, what, $9.40 less than what it would cost to send it?
Yeah.
3 days that's with UPS?
Way over, yeah. I didn't know that was what I wanted to tell you the other day about Rubio. And, you know, he's Jeb's bad boy or whatever you want to call
anointed
him.
Anointed one or...
Yeah, but old Jeb, you know... He'll get his finger in the pie. You know, if they ever make him vice president, well, to whoever's president.
Yeah, stay off small aircraft.
He might go hang himself.
Oh, don't joke.
I shouldn't, because... Sometimes I'll say something and joking, and it'll come true. I guess that's superstition, right?
Sometimes it's observation of known phenomena.
But the hurricane, one thing I wanted to say about that, and this is bad of me to say this, but I think a lot of people might think of it. You know how many people called in and said, well, those people in New Orleans should have left. They should have go to some place, safe place. I wonder how many people who got into this hurricane deal might not have prepared or couldn't prepare. You know, it costs money. I heard somebody on TV talking about how much money it might cost you to go somewhere else. And did you see those senior citizens? I think they were in New Jersey, and they were going to ride it out because
mm-hmm.
the alternative. Did you see that?
I did.
And the alternative was they didn't know where they would go, what would be there. And I know too many times where you go and it's kind of like a mini dome, you know, like it was in New Orleans. Like mini domes. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
you
I do.
Get a bunch of people packed in a place, and how many people have decent toilet habits, you know? And how many of the
in circumstances like that the real
a bunch of people.
The real test of people is in circumstances like that. For instance, during the Fukushima disaster, which continues to unfold in Japan, Japanese social structure held up because of the way it is, as it was explained to us by, among others, Robert there in Japan.
Yeah.
Social structures held up because of the depth and focus of them. The United States, no. Things fall apart real fast because we are a self-centered nation. Me, 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 right?
Yeah. But there's a lot of reasons why sometimes you can't go. Now, I know out where I live, it's a heavy crime area, but of course the whole country is. I have people say, why did you move from there? Well, I'm used to this place. This is my home, you know.
Right. It's the difference between the devil. It's the difference between the devil you know and the devil you don't.
And you could go to these gated communities, and there's plenty of crime going on there. Not just among the residents, but people that go in and out. You always have somebody going in and out. Of those places.
Certainly, without a doubt.
And anyway, a lot of times, you know, and I know that it's bad when you get the water gums up over to your eyeballs, you know, which that happens sometimes and has happened. But I want to tell you something before I forget, and then I'll shut up.
Oh.
I found out Yahoo, I caught them in a lie, on their front page, reporting on the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was watching, I stayed up and watched that till it started repeating a bunch of stuff. But anyway, they were talking about, they had, like it was news, that the hurricane had hit New York City, and they had high winds and flooding and all. Well, that was about 3 hours before it did hit New York City. And it did.
They had it pre-written for.
They didn't have the winds. Yeah. And they didn't have the winds. They had the flooding. Though they didn't have the high winds like they reported. And they reported before it even went there.
Right. You know, just getting things out of the way, making you right.
So, whatever you read on Yahoo News, sometimes it ain't correct.
Or they get a little ahead of themselves.
Yeah. Well, that was a little bit ahead of their self. But,
or perhaps a lot ahead of themselves.
Yeah. Okay. Well, one more thing I wanted to ask you. I've been thinking about this because I was asked a question on a survey. What would I do to cut down government spending? And you know, I was come to the conclusion. What do we need the Congress for?
Now, see, the first place I go is the Pentagon.
Well, that's a good. That's a
what
nice.
Do we need a military that costs that costs as much as the
trillions?
Well, no, that costs as much as the number 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 militaries combined.
Oh yeah. Well, my reasoning on the Congress is that most of them, if they're Republicans, they want to take away everything they can from us. If they're Democrats, they don't want nothing to change, and so they'll go along with the Republicans because they don't want to fight. We have a few, very few, and I can't even think of them now except the Black Caucus. I'm in the Black Caucus, and not all of them. And the Senate, enough said, Bernie Sanders.
That's about it.
And that's about it. Well, I'm gonna let you go, Bob.
All right. Well, you have.
And you're not gonna be there. You're not gonna be on air tomorrow night.
No, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, I'm not there.
Okay. And I do want to say to Tracy that I like Maxine Waters too. And if she goes to Washington and meets her, tell her that there's one Southern gal that appreciates those people in the Black Caucus that do stand up for we the people.
Well, I have, you know what, I feel the same way. There's very few people in the Congress I feel like actually represent our interests. And, I got no problems with Maxine Waters. And I got, I consider her in the same light that I consider Dennis Kucinich, formerly Alan Grayson when he was in there.
Yeah.
There is a small handful of others as well.
Yeah. And they say what they want to about us, but even the Blue Dogs, they just think Alan Grayson's terrible.
Yeah, he's mean.
But anyway, that... And also tell her that also Cornel West is one of my heroes.
Okay. Well, maybe she may be listening, although it's my understanding she's also in, she's in San Francisco this week. I saw a tweet a few minutes ago that she's in San Francisco, Tracy is. I saw her tweeting a few minutes ago that she was in some sort of, some sourdough bakery or something, and I immediately felt terribly, terribly jealous.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, you have a good night, Juanita.
Okay, good night.
We'll talk soon. Bye now.
All right, bye-bye.
Juanita calling from Central Florida. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, that speech that Bachman did was recent, right? Because she did say she's also running for president.
Yeah, I mean...
How the hell... I mean, okay, is this an exercise in, speaking to her so-called base, and then she plans on distancing herself from this? I mean, because it's an outrage that some candidate for political office in this country is up there talking about, Jesus and God. And I mean, it's too much. I couldn't even believe I was hearing that. It was way, way too much.
You know what? That's even way out there past George W. Bush, isn't it?
Well, yeah, no, it's just, no, it's ridiculous. I mean, she's, I'm speechless because between her and that other freak, the more I see of this Perry person, the more I'm like, are you kidding me with this? And again, no wonder Texas is in the state that it's in. Good Jesus. They've had a decade of this freak?
And remember, before that, they had a decade of W.
Yeah, no, but the thing is with the parody, I mean, just the outright lies that are never challenged. I mean, this man is talking about Social Security is some sort of cruel Ponzi scheme or it's unconstitutional. And blah, blah, blah. And it's just kind of like these people never address, what do you expect to replace it with? Because you sure in the hell aren't going to allow all the millions of people, a third of them who are not old, to not have access to this insurance program. You may disagree with me, but even if the Republicans come into power, they are not going to get rid of those programs. Mark my word. Now, they may cut every program for the poor, because doing anything for the poor is okay. That's fine.
Yeah.
But they're not going to destroy... I don't believe it. I don't know what game they're running. But there's too many Republicans who get the program. You see, who get these programs. That's the thing that I'm constantly looking at now. It's just like, no, you know, I don't know who they're talking to, because anyone who pays any attention to the budget of the U.S. government knows that the vast majority of it are these insurance programs and the military. That's it. The rest of it is so small that, you know what I'm saying? So I'm starting to get really confused, because I don't care if Obama loses and these other people all come in. There's no way. Because what are they going to do with the millions of people who are going to lose that transfer payment? I'm just talking to you. I'm not talking to you as a partisan or nothing. I'm talking
No.
How is the country going to function when the reality of what the U.S. government is what I just described?
My only, and I'm going to respond to you, Sandra, not as a partisan. My only response is that I think you are predicating your query on what may turn out to be, I would like to be wrong about this, but you may be starting from a false premise. And I maintain that you kind of are, because I don't think that these people actually want a government. I don't think Rick Perry was kidding when he was talking secession.
Well, okay, no, I understand, but what I'm saying is that when they come up against what they're actually talking about doing, you know, the actual mechanics and, you know, taking apart these three safety net programs, or these three insurance programs, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. I'm not saying I'm going to wait around to see how they pull it off, but I'm a bit skeptical now because of how these programs came into be, how long they've been in place, how the money is generated, i.e. this tax that all workers have to pay. You know, I don't know. And I'm not saying it's like their abortion argument. It's the same thing where they would never want to ban abortion because it's too good to them in the electoral process. You know what I mean?
Right.
Likewise, I can't, you know, because there's too many white people who depend. I'm sorry, I'm going there. Too many white people who depend on these programs. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So, I'm quite happy to hear your explanation, you know, but I'm just really starting to be a little bit curious about how their dogma is going to translate into
these
programs.
This could be one of those situations, Sandra, where they're finding out how difficult it is to serve two masters.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that is, I read an article over the weekend, I think it was over at Truthout, that said it was something like the history of hating Social Security or something like that. And it was really quite an educational experience because it, among other things, it put the assaults on Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid in perspective over time. And it showed the genesis of these think tanks making arguments about eliminating it.
Yeah.
And so when you consider the amount of money that flows through those things and the amount of clout that they now have via whether it be 527s or, you know, just outright Citizens United money.
Yeah.
They say they want an end to it, so these people who are beholden to them have to give lip service to that.
Okay. I understand, but there's also, if you look at the marketplace for these programs, I mean, how many millions of people, I mean, businesses and whatnot, are sustained by these programs? You understand what I'm saying? It's like they say one thing about what government ain't, but we know what it is, and they goddamn it know what it is, too. This is what I mean about the disingenuousness of it. Give me a goddamn break.
Oh, right? Look, yeah, no, no more scooter chair ads on cable TV, because those companies go away.
And
no more Wilfred Brimley hustling diabetic supplies.
And nursing homes. Hello, they're all privatized. I'm sure they have an interest group to bark for them. You see what I'm saying? I just think that, now don't get me wrong, I think every program, including Pell Grants, any sort of program to help poor people could be just wiped away if these people get into power. Now, I'm quite happy to assume that that is the goal, because poor people, the next stop is jail. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, that or the dirt.
Yeah, death or jail. They don't give a F about poor people. And I think that is the case. But these, you know, what's left of the middle class and these old people and people's parents and, you know, maybe people who are disabled, who depend on these insurance programs, and I refuse to call them anything else now but insurance programs.
No, they're damn sure not entitlement programs.
It's just a joke, you know, because there is a dedicated stream in case they seem to forget that. Once again, people like Rick Perry is like, bitch, what's he talking about? People pay into this shit on the hour, every hour. What are you talking about? It's a Ponzi scheme. You see what I mean? I'm just sort of... And I don't mean to sound...
Well, among other things, it displays the fact that Rick Perry doesn't have the first damn clue what a Ponzi scheme is.
Oh, God. Well, anyway, I don't know. I just am sort of, you know, I'm just trying to look at the landscape. Because, see, I have to sort of consider the real possibility that the Democrats are going to lose all three branches. Because I don't really see what Obama is going to do to help himself out. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Oh, you mean like the big job speech that's coming?
Well, that's not going to be anything, because he, along with his other people who are left in his administration, we've heard people admit they don't believe that a government job is a job. They believe that too. And so, you know, you're like, yikes. If you're hearing that kind of rhetoric from the so-called Democratic administration, then the hopes of a real sort of jump start for jobs, well, you know.
Yeah, not so much.
Yeah, I think.
No, that was my point. This is not going to be some sort of tomorrow I'm signing legislation to create the WPA and the CCC speech.
Right. And, you know, and I also look at how he's handling any little pushback to the banks. I mean, he's doing his best to represent his main constituency, which seems to be the bank. But I just read, which I think is interesting, that the FDIC is now objecting to this other $8.5 billion settlement that Bank of America is trying to shove down their investors, you know, who are suing them. And this lawsuit would allow them to pay off the investors that have been scammed through Countrywide. You know Countrywide, right?
Right, right.
Okay, well, anyway, the FDIC has come down saying, oh, no, we're not down with this. So Bank of America is under assault from all sides. They just got a pick-me-up from Buffett, kind of like what he did for Goldman Sachs. You know, he's just put in, like, $5 billion or some madness. But they just sold half of their holdings in their Chinese concern. So they're in big trouble, and we're in trouble, because that's one of those too-big-to-fail things, right?
Right.
So anyway, I'm just, you know, I just don't know what Obama is going to be running on. I'm, you know, we have a ways to go. I'm confused and, you know, concerned about, well, really, what's the deal? Do you think people will be so freaked out by Rick Perry if he's the candidate that they'll just be like, oh, no, and run back to Obama in droves? Is that what we're hoping for?
That's a piss poor political strategy if it is. I always took Senator Byrd's words to heart. He told me once, he said, there's only two ways to run a campaign, unopposed and scared stiff. And that's the truth. You gotta run like you acknowledge the possibility that you will lose. And these polling numbers that came out last week, you know, one poll does not an election make, but Obama was leading Rick Perry by 2 points?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's sort of, you know, you can either be sort of swayed by the Obama supporters and other people like Jonathan Alter, or that other freak at that I call Bob Baghdad Bob.
Yeah.
Ezra Klein. you know, they're all trying to write as if, oh, well, Obama don't have a choice, this is the best he can do line, that bullshit, which is fantasy world. Because it's like, well, no, that's not what people are concerned about. They don't give a F about that. They are saying that they don't have jobs, like every other election. So they seem to think they're going to be able to run around that. And for the life of me, Bob, I can't understand where they're coming up with this calculus. How is it different from any other election ever in history when unemployment was really high? How is this going to be any different?
I don't know.
Okay, I'm just wondering. I'm asking you because I'm just...
No, I don't know because, what is it, 9 out of 13 don't end well.
Right, and you know, we're way above the 7% that had Reagan scream like a madman. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and as far as what will they do, my understanding, or well, not understanding, my low opinion of American political perspicacity, if you will, says this, Sandra. And that is that as long, and this has certainly been the messaging, hasn't it? As long as they promise the people who are on the program now or will be in the next 5 years that they won't be touched, they can screw the rest of us all the way into the sheetrock.
Well, there is that. Although, you know, I'm still, like I said, because it's a generational program, I'm still confused. But I'm also, you know, this is the other problem with Obama is that, well, once again, maybe if someone hideous got in like Perry, you would get the proper mobilization on the progressive side like they did against Bush.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, everybody will all be friends again if there's a Republican in the White House.
Well, if that's the case, that could be something that could stop the destruction of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Whereas if Obama is reelected, forgive me, he can just go ahead and finish the programs off. Now, I hate to say that, but remember what I said to you before. You know, it might be hellish what you wish for when this man ain't got no constraints.
You know what? Let me expand on that for just a minute, if I may. Is there anybody out there? And I'm not trying to be a jackass, but is there anybody out there that sees Joe Biden running for the presidency of the United States in 2016, assuming that Barack Obama is reelected? Is there anybody that sees? Because I don't. So that means it's going to be a wide open field in 2016, and this adds on to your argument that he has absolutely nothing to constrain him.
And also remember what he said years ago about entitlement reform is huge on his own priority.
Number one. Number one.
Forget that bullshit.
Number one.
People out there shouldn't forget it because, you know, as you're scrambling around making sure that one of these freaks don't get into power, watch out if he gets back in office. And I know I've contradicted myself in this conversation because I am freaked out by the prospect of those Republicans being in control of everything. But I'm also freaked out in this Nixon goes to China shit that could be on
the horizon. Well, see, I was about to really annoy you with that. Because that's what scares me. Because let's just look at this from a historical perspective thing. What is the health care bill that got put through, the Affordable Care Act? What is that except for a very lightly tinkered with version of the same damned bill that Bob Dole offered to counter so-called Clinton care or Hillary care or whatever they were calling it in 1992? You remember that?
Yeah, and it's taken straight from the Heritage Foundation, too. That's another thing about...
Yes, yes.
You know, so when Obama was flirting and torturing or taunting us or teasing us with the public option, it was like, oh, whatever, this is just, you know, just for the hippies.
But I do remember, Sandra, that during the primary process, there were a number of people out there who were saying, listen, Hillary's health care plan is a lot closer to what we want than what his is.
Well, exactly. No, and it's just kind of like, you know, the public option went away right away. And then we were presented with this heritage third way mesh of madness that we're getting. And, you know, I don't know what that's going to be.
And
that's
see, if you look at Afghanistan, if you look at Guantanamo. If you look, there's a number of places, and I don't want any of the diehard Obama supporters to say, see, he doesn't love him like he ought to. No, these are just facts that there are a number of places within this presidency, Sandra, where Barack Obama has actually carried on and carried out the plans of the Bush administration.
Exactly. And, you know,
and so I remember very well January of 2005 when George W. Bush said, I just won me some political capital, and I'm going to spend it. And the first thing he said he was going to spend it on was, yeah, the privatization of Social Security.
And you saw the mobilization like you never did before, and that shit was stopped. Now, we've already had a taste of how the left and the Democrats respond to Obama's actions, and that's not really...
Right, and that's what scares me. If Bush privatization of Social Security 2.0 beta comes out in, say, January 2013, well, I'm pretty secure in saying that there is an element within the Democratic Party. And there's a word for them, and I'm not going to use it because I respect their opinions, and I like them. But they're going to respond by calling us hippies for objecting to, well, look, maybe it'll work out to put young workers' social security in the stock market.
Oh, yeah, no, and don't forget, and I remember this, too. You know, you follow away these little statements, and you think, what the? But that whole statement, when Obama was talking about entitlements, and he's had the nerve to mention the, you know, vaguely and kind of not straightforward, but he suggested that, well, maybe people like him don't need it. Bingo.
Right. So what's the harm in a little means testing?
Right. And that's the end of it. Everyone understands, not everyone, I'm saying in our little family here, when they means test the program in this country, that means it's for people who are, poor, or who can't get anything else. Thus, the program is marginalized and easy to finish off.
Right, and what will begin as rational means testing will proceed through Republican machinations to become really mean means testing.
Right, and the whole idea of the genius of the program that Roosevelt and his people came up with was everyone in, nobody out. I'm quite happy for Warren Buffett to get his fucking Medicare and Social Security. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I want him to have it. I want him to have it.
I don't have a problem with it.
I want Rockefellers on Social Security.
Ayn Rand. That bitch got it. Good for her. Yeah. Everybody in, nobody out.
See, maybe that's the fundamental disconnect that people like you and me and the rest of the Horn family have, Sandra, is that we look at these things in a way that other people don't. Or can't or won't. And that, I mean, you know, food stamps, you know what? I want everybody to have food stamps. Medicare, I want everybody to have Medicare. Social Security, I want everybody to have Social Security. I mean, because you know what? If you're raising two kids and you're making $45,000 a year in America, you ain't eating steak every night either.
Well, you know, and I know we've had this discussion before, but, you know, the biggest barrier to the expanding of the social safety net, even when the marginal tax rate was 91%, is, like I said before, the, quote, diversity of the country, i.e., we don't want the niggas to get it, so it ain't going to happen. Because you don't have that problem in all the other OECD countries. Their safety net covers the whole of the population. The problem in this country is that there's so much hatred for various groups, gays, blacks, whoever, that they just can't find it in themselves to extend this shit to everybody. So we say that it's a market, the magic of the marketplace, and all other sort of excuses. But the biggest problem is that they don't, you know, they don't think certain people is deserving of it. I'm sorry, that's what it comes down to. That's why it's not here in this country. That's what I think. I think that explains everything about a good explanation for why we don't have single payer. You know, even Nixon believed in a minimum income. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And, you know, Andy just wrote in from Redwood City, Sandra, and he said, Tell Sandra, President Obama calls Social Security and Medicare an entitlement. It doesn't matter what we or you or us call it. So the term is now well respected in the corporate media, among corporatists, and the Blue Dogs, DLC, Friends of the Chicago School. If these two programs, Andy says, are entitlements, then by definition, all private insurance companies are running entitlement programs. You pay a premium, have a contract, and expect that contract to be honored when you submit a claim or the policy matures. But hell, says Andy, Mr. Obama has put these programs on the chopping block and facilitates the Republican Karl Rove talking points with his use of the word entitlement.
Well, the problem is that people don't understand. I mean, when I hear entitlement, I can understand that it sounds like, well, yeah, I paid into it, so I'm entitled to it. That's the connection I make.
Right.
But we know what they're turning it into. That's why I refuse. I have to use insurance. Because if I say entitlement to people I'm talking to, they take the Karl Rove definition. Because that's what's been
Welfare.
Pounded into the heads of people. You know, when they hear entitlements, they don't make the connection that, listen, you dumbass, you've been paid into it, so you're entitled to it. They can't seem to be, I don't know if it's bad education. I don't know what it is, Bob. You know me. I'm the last little snob. You know it's true. It's like, what the fuck? Make some connections here. Critical thinking. Now, please. So, in the meanwhile, we have Obama talking about entitlements, and you and I are like, God damn. Because we know what it means, just like Andy just explained very clearly.
Yeah, and I get what Juanita meant in her call, too, when she says that, you know, the last human being that she knows of in the Senate is Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Now, here's a guy who is going to offer, if he hasn't already, legislation that just, you know, eliminates that stupid $106,000 cap.
That would solve the problem, you know, for the next 7 generations, if I may add.
If not 10, 12, 15,
yeah,
what have you. It might be forever.
Yeah, no, because, we're talking, and yes, that would be a 12% or 6% tax on all them motherfuckers. So that's one way of taxing them.
And what have they got to complain about if we do that?
Oh, no, it's so gross that this is not an issue. But, you know, more importantly...
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, more importantly is the idea that the fucking capital gains tax, you know, the fact that they can't even raise that 5 or 7% is shocking. You understand? Because these people earn all their income from capital gains, and that bitch is only 15%. It's absolutely criminal and damn near immoral that people aren't up in arms about that. Because you got all these assholes who don't do nothing. I mean, I want to grow up to sell derivatives. Fuck. Okay?
Hey, maybe you can sell Texas dead teacher life insurance derivatives. I mean,
but the whole argument that somehow capital gains is superior to your wages is absurd in this environment now. You don't even make no sense. They can pay.
But remember that they go on the offensive by saying that it's too much. They want the capital gains tax eliminated.
No, they want it eliminated, but I mean, it needs to, no, but it's a source of revenue that needs to be attacked. It has to be increased. It's incredible. I mean, it's just the whole sort of arsenal that the rich have that can be exposed to taxation is damn near endless.
Yeah, well, I mean, and we've talked about this before.
Yes.
There has been in this country, Sandra, why is there not now a penny transaction tax on everything that takes place on Wall Street?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, Tobin tax. I mean, it's a name for it. There's a theory out there. There's an economist who developed it. I mean, the thing is that Europe is embarking on, they're talking about, some sort of Tobin tax.
Well, it's certainly not going to. A penny is. You know what? If investors leave the market over a penny,
gone.
Exactly.
Not only that, but it needs to be disciplined because I'll go back to the one quadruple fucking derivative thing that's floating around. I mean, if you had some sort of transaction tax, you know, it'd be a lot less appealing to be doing these bets upon bets upon bets upon bets like we have. You know. Yeah, the state is obligated to attack what is essentially a foreign occupier. That's what these sort of financial entities have become, because they're sapping the sort of life energy out of everything, as far as I can tell.
And so, if we raise the capital gains tax to 25%. Raise it to 30.
Yeah,
I don't care.
A penny
transaction tax on every trade. Because you know what? The trading houses themselves have their own form of taxation. It's called a fee.
Exactly. No, listen, the percentage on their transaction plus, you know, adding, making the capital gains 27% to 30% or whatever, or 25%. Listen, them bitches will still be rich.
Yeah, it's not like they're not going to be able to afford lunch.
No, and it's just incredible. And the thing that's really disturbing to me is that, you know, there's this whole idea of state capacity, and then there's Weber's definition of the state being having a monopoly to do violence. Well, the state is also the entity that can tax. But somehow, that mechanism is out the window, where the people who are so-called representing us spend all their time protecting the wealth of the rich.
Right. And see, some of that, I think, you hear these little things that are out there. There's that one passage in McCulloch versus Maryland.
Yeah.
Where the Supreme Court remarks that the power to tax is the power to destroy.
Yeah.
And, if I had my little Mr. Peabody time machine, I'd go back and make sure that that doesn't go into that opinion.
Well,
because
no,
it's one of those things that little right-wingers hang on to with their nasty little claws sunk in all the way up to the quick.
No. But the thing is that they have no problems policing the citizenry. You see what I'm saying? The state is quite adept at doing that. And it used to be quite adept at taxing the rich. I mean, those marginal tax rates, that's not fantasy. That was real.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hideous because the U.S., you know, with their Bretton Woods regime, you know, introduced all this shit to the world, you know, and now it's really coming back to screw us over so badly. It's stunning. I don't know.
The other place, and you and I are both in this same boat. I didn't like it when they did it to me, and when they did it to me, I was a much younger man. I'm still pissed off that I got to work my ass off to 67 to ever draw the first damn dime of Social Security. I want that shit gone backwards.
Yeah, no, and it should, and the way we have this kind of permanent high unemployment, the policymakers and the people who are designing these policies should be doing exactly that. They should roll back the ages so more people can basically get out of the labor market because other people can get the jobs. I mean, these solutions aren't that difficult. And the fact that we don't have a government that's responsive to us is a huge problem, which I don't know if the ballot box is going to take care of. I mean, I've been laughing at old Mike Malloy. He is gone, man. He's out there.
I've been reading Brad Friedman long enough to think that I got no real faith in the ballot box anymore as long as we're voting on video games.
Yeah. No, I'm not disagreeing with it. It's just kind of, I don't know. I mean, you know, like I started at the top of this call, which I'm still sort of confused about, you know, where the right is going to go with these entitlement, you know, I'm saying it, these insurance programs.
I'm comfortable saying that they won't do an outright kill because they can't get away with it, but to see them still... I mean, see what happens to me? I go back to things, for instance, Cassie, you know, she's a sophomore at Princeton now, and she said, retirement, Bob, my generation can't even imagine being 40, let alone retired.
Right, so you're saying that whole generation is not even going to be paying attention to these sort of drastic changes that they'll be able to do.
Or they will pay attention enough to hear the right wing say, well, we're going to let you keep your money. Because remember, that's how the last raft of tax cuts got boondoggled in.
No, but that was before you had a total collapse of the economic, the financial system. I mean, trust me, I understand that the propaganda is real thick, but I do think a lot more people are much more skeptical of the financial system now than they were in 2005. They gotta be.
But by the same...
So for someone to suggest we're gonna, you know, make every, all the programs a 401, they might get laughed in the face with that one, because, Maybe you're right about that.
Or some sort of hybrid, Sandra. You know, we're not going to completely do away with it, but we're going to cut the rate, and we will not tax you if you put that much into your own 401k or whatever. You know, cut it by 2.2%, and the next election cycle, the Republicans will say, "Well, I want you to be able to keep more of your money. We're going to make it 3%."
Yeah.
And so without ever telling anybody that they're killing Social Security, and by telling the younger generation of working people, well, you know, you can go spend it on the lottery, or you can go to Vegas, or hell, you know what? You could put it into a medical savings account or a Roth IRA or any of that silly horse shit. Well, what they're effectively doing, well, it's like the conversation you and I had when they struck the deal that cut the payroll tax by 2 percentage points. And you said, when is that ever going to get put back on?
Actually, it's going to get put back because all of a sudden Republicans have decided that's a tax cut they don't want. Do you know about this?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is, I think that's really interesting. It's like, oh, wait. Oh, wait, now you don't want a tax cut to remain? It's just sick. It's different.
And if they do that, then the rate goes back up, and that gives them more room in a couple of years to say, we're going to cut by 2.5%, and you're going to take that money and invest it in the market.
Yeah, or some madness. I mean, no, I understand. But at the base of this is the total lack of leadership on the Democratic side, unless they're just two peas pod, you know what I mean, which is... What I'm beginning to think is the case is kind of good cop, bad cop, Democrat or Republican, right?
Yeah, it's not the first time it's run across my mind, because, like I said, I've said before, you know, maybe we're the rubes for saying, you know, well, why can't he be the kind of president we wanted him to be? Maybe he's being the kind of president he wants to be.
No, I'm over that. That one's out the window. That's why I said, you know, he might be... ex really effective president, not the weak one. But anyway, just a quick thought. Did you see that? I forget the guy who wrote that article. He used to be the coach of LSU. He wrote in the New York Times about there should be a farm league for the NFL, like baseball.
I didn't see it, but I'm not surprised to hear it.
Yeah, you know, because it's like, oh, you know, the. Trying to, I guess the whole idea of it would take care of all the infractions in the college, because some people, you know, don't want to go to college. They just want to, you know, play football, but they're not physically ready. So why not set up this farm system where you can be paid to get ready to play in the NFL? I mean, I don't know. My first thought was like, ew, but maybe you have any opinion about that?
Well, first of all, I think you're going to have a hard time wresting this multi-billion-dollar industry away from the colleges.
There's that, and also that's what I was about to ask you. How would they fund such a farm thing? You know, where would the funding come from? The NFL?
Yeah, I mean, if it's truly a farm system, because that's the way it works in baseball.
So the NFL would pay these young people to get their bodies right to go into the NFL.
Yeah, and they would, I suppose it would be structured in such a way as, you know, I don't know, maybe they play on Wednesdays. When does it, like a farm club.
Yeah.
You know, say a AAA baseball team loses money. But it puts, you know, it's a pretty good brand of baseball, and they put fans in the stands, and they, you know, they sell concessions and everything, and they might come close to a break even. And if they don't, the ownership packs up and moves on to somewhere else that will.
Right. I mean, because there's been a lot of sort of...
But there is a significant subsidy that flows downhill from the mother organization.
Yeah, so that would be in direct competition with the multi-billions that these universities get, though, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, if some kid who... You know, the real hot shots are not going to go to college, and... One of the things, and it had to be dealt with a couple of years ago, you know, where the NFL and the NCAA came to an agreement that, you know what, you cannot go and play NFL football until you've got 2 years under your belt in college.
No, I thought it was three. It's only two.
I think it's three.
Cause that's what the article suggesting, that the stint outside of the NFL for these young people would have to be 3 years, which is, I guess, the number of years a man needs extra to get big enough to play in the NFL or something.
But it's, in a way, if you're maybe you could interpose that as a layer between college and pro. But all you're doing, you know, one of the reasons that kids want to come out early if they think they have a prospect of going high in the draft, Sandra, and this is not a sporting thing, you know, this is a workers' issue, as we've discussed it in the past, is that the odds. You know, let's say you stay for that senior year out of loyalty to alma mater, right? I mean, you really care. You're trying to get an education. And on the third game of the season, you blow a knee.
Right.
Or something even more awful happens. Well, you know what? Nothing nice happens to you from the college's standpoint from that point on. Because,
they've got
roster requirements they've got to meet. You know, this ain't Woody Hayes football where you can have a home squad of 197.
Yeah, no, you're ass out. They're done with you, and you're gone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I just thought it was sort of, you know, it's interesting, and I guess all this is bubbling up because there's been just sort of nonstop scandals, right?
Well, I think they're finally coming to grips with the fact that these scandals you're always going to, and this Miami scandal is so damn tawdry.
It's over the top. Come on now. I was just like, what?
No, really? You paid for the stripper's abortion? Really?
Yeah, no, it's just...
And then the pathetic quality of Miami saying, well, we don't know who this guy is. And oh, yeah, you do. And they show the footage of the guy carrying the Miami flag out of the tunnel with the pelican, with the smoke and the fog and the guy... No, you know who we are. Yeah.
Right. No. And it's just, it is so, so much so that you have to hear Luther Campbell going on. I'm like, Luther Campbell? Shit. Anyway, no. I don't know. The Miami thing is hella entertaining. Listen, they probably cannot. They are just can't wait for the people to get on the football field. This has just been a disaster. The NFL.
At this point, Miami could go 0-12. Please just play, you know, as long as they're being allowed to play football, because I don't know if you heard, but at first it was being said, well, you know, we'll never use the death penalty again because when we shut down SMU, we screwed the entire Southwest Conference. You know, that hurt players who were innocent, blah, 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 blah. And the honchos at the NCAA said, oh, no, the death penalty's still on the table.
Oh.
And, you know, if not this, who, what? And then you take into account that you want to know who's not needing any laxatives lately? Nick Saban at Alabama. Because he's got two of those crooked bastards from Miami on his staff.
Okay, yeah, no, you know what time it is. That's what I'm saying. All those programs, especially the high achieving ones, they all hella suspect. And you know, old Fugly down in Carolina, he was the one talking about paying folks, wasn't he? So they all know.
Yeah.
We all know the writing's on the wall. But I just wonder how it's going to resolve itself because, you know, come season time, everybody forgets because they just want to watch some football. So I know they...
And you know what? I'm that guy.
Exactly. Exactly.
I want to see Dana Holgers. Because it was all small. It was small potatoes comparatively. But my beloved Mountaineers went through the ringer. And that friend of Jesus who turned out to be... doing some sort of cloak and dagger Stalin-esque sleaze program. I mean, the guy gets on the phone to a sports writer at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and says, dig up some dirt on this Holgorsen guy for me, would you? And this, you know, this is the guy who said, well, it doesn't matter whether we win or lose. They're fine Christian young men we're turning out here in Morgantown. Oh, that shit must have turned to ashes in his mouth. So I just want to see him play some damn ball. And LSU is coming to Morgantown. And, you know, I don't know. I'll put a limb on eBay for a pair of good tickets to that.
Yo, don't, you know, hide your cough, sir. Okay, listen, I'll let you go. Oh, I'll send this to you. It's this amazing animation of the star being eaten by a black hole that they said they saw.
Ooh, awesome.
Yeah, I'll send it to you now. Okay, take
care. I love that stuff. See you, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. This is Conversation Radio, just in case you were wondering. And let's see who is where. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's happening, man?
I don't know much. It's always good to hear from Sandra.
Yeah, I think she's ready for some ball.
I think so.
And you know what? I'm ready. It has been a long, hot summer. And I'm ready to just be completely mindlessly diverted. I admit it. I'm shallow. I want one day a week where I can just go damn and recharge, you know?
Yeah. You know, I enjoy college ball, but I'm just waiting for my beloved Redskins to take the field and see what they can do.
You got any hope?
Actually, I do. This Beck kid seems to be, the real deal, maybe. I hope.
Well, you know, it is wait and see. I mean, I guess, what, Donovan wanted to go to Minnesota, didn't he?
Yeah. And as Sam Huff always says, you know, live in hope, die in despair.
You remember
Sam Huff, don't you?
Oh yeah, and so does Jim Brown.
Oh yeah. Hard head West Virginian.
Yeah, he's the one who told the story of every home in every coal camp in West Virginia had three photographs on the wall. Jesus Christ, John L. Lewis, and John F. Kennedy. Because that was the kind of home he grew up in.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's the post office. Isn't that in the
Constitution? Yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah.
But being in the Constitution has never slowed down a teabagger now, has it?
And
so's the general welfare.
And wasn't Ben Franklin one of the people, the person... that said, you know, that was one of the main impetuses for ditching the Confederacy.